Chapter 20. Though she had never drafted a drop of blue, Caris had always had an affinity for what were called the blue virtues. She liked having a plan. She liked order, structure, hierarchy. Even as a child, she enjoyed learning etiquette. Sitting at a Parian formal dinner and knowing the exact function of every tiny spoon and shell cracker, knowing how many times to flick the excess water from your fingers after washing in the water bowl between the first and second course, and knowing where exactly to set your three-tined urum to let the table slaves know you were finished eating, brought her something akin to peace. Placing your goblet halfway over the lateral divisor meant you wanted exactly half a glass more wine. On the vertical meant you'd like to switch from white to red. Sign and countersign. The Luxiat's call and the congregation's response. She loved dance and could perform most of the dances of the seven satrapies. She loved music and could play the gem's horn or accompany herself on the psantria while she sang. But nothing she'd learned was helping her now. There was no structure, no hierarchy, no order to direct her. She was supposed to still be on a ship. She was supposed to meet with a Chromeria spy before she got this far into Tyria. He was supposed to guide her up the river to King Hrodul's army and give her a cover that would get her into the army without getting killed. Instead, she was dripping wet, alone, and less than a full day's walk from that army, with no introduction, no map, no guidelines, no plan. Gavin and his bastard had disappeared down the river not 5 minutes ago. I'm getting reckless. The red is destroying me. Caris wrung out her heavy black wool cloak and started looking for a place to make camp. On the hillside there were huge numbers of eucalyptus trees filling the air with their fragrance, mixing with the taller pines, blocking out the harsh rays of a Hollum's bright eye. It took her only a few minutes to find a decent spot mostly obscured by brush. She gathered wood and made a little pyramid. She didn't bother with kindling. There are advantages to being a red, but she did look around carefully for several minutes before she drew out her spectacles from their little pocket up one sleeve. She was alone. She drafted a thin thread of red luxon into the base of her pyramid. Even drafting that much red blew on the coals of her fury. She tucked away the red and green lenses and thought of smashing Gavin's grinning face. I love you. How dare he? She shook her head and shook her finger out, flinging away deliberately off-centre red luxon, getting rid of the excess. As with all luxon drafted imperfectly, it decayed rapidly, releasing a paired scent. The smell of resin that all luxon shared, and the odd dried tea leaves and tobacco smell of red in particular. She took out a flint and her knife instead of drafting sub-red directly for a spark. She was already cold, so she struck the spark like a mere mortal. I love you. That bastard. While her wet clothes dried, she changed into the spare clothing that had been in her waterproof bag. Tyrian fashion had become mercifully practical in the last 15 years. Though in social or urban settings women wore calf or ankle-length dresses, belted and often accompanied with a wrap or a full jacket for the evening, on the trail and in the countryside women often wore men's linen trousers, albeit with longer shirts than men wore as a nod to modesty, worn untucked but belted, like a tunic. The way Commander Ironfist had explained it to her was that after the False Prism's War, there hadn't been enough men and boys to harvest the oranges or other fruits. The young women who joined the harvesters had shortened their skirts to make it easier to climb ladders repeatedly. Clearly, someone had objected to that. Probably not the young men holding the ladders. Thus, the addition of trousers. Caris liked the clothing. She was used to wearing men's clothes from training with the Blackguard, and if this loose linen didn't move with her as nicely or feel as soft as the stretchy, luxin-infused Blackguard garb, it was still cool. It also did a better job of camouflaging her body than the tight Blackguard garb. No man would dare so much as whistle at a woman Blackguard on the Jaspers, even if she was flaunting a hard-earned figure a little. A woman travelling alone in a far country shouldn't tempt fate more than necessary. As her little fire burned merrily, Caris distracted herself by arming carefully. Her ataghan would sit, concealed and fairly accessible within her pack once the black cloak was dried and rolled up. A bichwa, a scorpion, was strapped to one thigh inside her trousers. It was a weapon with iron rings to fit the fingers, four claws for swiping, and a dagger, the scorpion's tail, for stabbing. It wasn't quickly accessible, but she always thought it was good to have more weapons than were visible. Another long knife was tucked into her belt. Her bifocal spectacles went into the bag. Their weight simply made them too obvious if she concealed them in these long, flowing sleeves. That left her with her eye caps. The caps, with horizontally streaked lenses of red and green, each fit onto an eye socket as tight and close to the eye as possible. A thin ridge of sticky red luxin made sure the lenses would stay on her face, and, if she weren't careful, would rip off half her eyebrow when she removed them. The sticky red luxin was shielded with a little strip of solid yellow luxin that was to be torn off before you stuck the caps onto your eyes. For all that the eye caps had saved her life a time or three, Caris didn't like them. Naturally long eyelashes were a nice accessory at the Lux Lord's Ball, but not so much when you had a lens a finger's breadth from your eye. Caris hid her caps in plain sight, on a necklace made of chunky, multicoloured stones, none so clear or interesting as to make the necklace seem valuable. The caps clicked together around one link and blended with all the other stones. Another pair of caps was tucked under her belt buckle. "I'm stalling," she thought. From where she was now, she had only two choices. She could head down the river and meet up with her contact in Garriston and then come back up the river, or she could try to infiltrate King Haradul's army on her own. Going down the river would waste time, and she'd still be much too early. There was also the threat of bandits. She assumed her contact would have some good way of circumventing them on the way back up, but that wouldn't help her as she headed downriver. Going on alone would mean trying to join a hostile army without a proper introduction. And now that Gavin had clashed with King Haradul, the king knew that Chromeria had already gotten one drafter here, so surely he would be doubly suspicious of anyone else showing up. In fact, Gavin's little stunt in Recton had probably made her work impossible. There were certainly Tyrians as pale as she was, but her accent was wrong, and she was a drafter. To a suspicious camp, everything about her would scream spy. The White's orders had never factored in the circumstances in which she found herself now. It was like sitting at what you thought was a dignified Parian dinner with its rules and finding yourself seated with raucous Elysian pirates feeding you blowfish instead. There were rules for that, too, and if you broke them, you'd consume a nice tender morsel that contained a poison that would leave you in agony for 10 minutes, at which point it would leave you dead. And Caris didn't know the rules here. Of course, Gavin would just eat the whole damned fish, and somehow, miraculously, it wouldn't harm him. Everything was effortless for Gavin. He'd never had to work hard for anything. Born with a monumental talent to a scheming, rich father, he simply took what he wanted. Even the rules of being a prism didn't constrain him. He travelled to and fro about the seven satrapies without so much as a blackguard escort when he didn't want one. And now he could cross the Cerulean Sea in a few hours. For Aholum's sake, now he could fly. "Get out of my head, liar. I'm done with you." The lines didn't fit. The tiny spoons were gone, and the Urums had 1,000 tines instead of 3. Fine. Caris wasn't going home. She wasn't going to wait for some man to come hold her hand and get her into Haradul's camp. She wasn't going to fail. There was more than one way to find out what King Haradul's plans were. Of course, she didn't know what those were, but she was going to figure it out. As for now, she remembered something her brother Koyos used to say before he'd been killed in the fire. "When you don't know what to do, do what's right and do what's in front of you, but not necessarily what's right in front of you." The town of Recton had been burned to the ground. There had been one survivor. There might be more. And if there were, they would be in desperate need of help and possibly protection. Those Caris could provide. And if it involved lighting some jackass up with a fireball the size of a small house, so much the better.